Welcome to the first episode of The Movie Palace, a new podcast taking a look at the films of old Hollywood. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and I'm delighted to be joined on this very first episode by somebody who I hope we'll hear a bit from as we go on in the future. And her name is Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Carl.
How's it going, Clara?
Good. I'm really honoured to be on this podcast, this first ever episode with you.
The pleasure is all mine, and I mean that truly. So let me explain. So Clara and I know each other from another podcast we've both contributed to quite a bit, haven't we, Clara? And that's The X-Cast, which is our friend Tony Black's podcast, all about the classic cult sci-fi show The X-Files. So that's kind of how we met, wasn't it? I'm not sure how long ago now, at least a year, maybe more.
I think probably about a year ago we did a recording of a very sort of strange episode.
Oh yeah. Well,
we won't go into that.
No, we won't.
We've been there and done
but
that.
But anyway, so I don't know. I guess we must have podcasted, I don't know, 10 or a dozen times in total.
Yeah, definitely.
Something like that anyway. And it's always been great, of course. And I know we've both spoken like over the months since, you know, we're all kind of toying around with setting up our own podcast and everything. And I'd sort of been toying around with this idea. I mean, first of all, it was going to be a podcast dedicated to the Western genre. I think I mentioned that to you at one point, didn't I?
Yeah.
And then as it normally goes with me, I just kind of let the idea slip and time went by. And then eventually I revisited it and I thought, well, maybe just the studio system itself. And I think when I first mentioned this to you, I was kind of like 1920 to 1955, quite specific. And I think at one point I was thinking, well, I'll just, you know, confine it to the major studios as well. And then I kind of thought, well, that might be a bit restrictive, really. So I'm just going to say it's focusing on the golden age of Hollywood, this podcast in general. I'm roughly defining that as 1920s to 1960s. But I don't want to box myself in too much just to begin with. It is focusing, as I said, on Hollywood, American cinema, but that might change. I mean, I'm very keen for the podcast to like evolve. But that's how we're starting off anyway. So what I'm doing in this first phase and what Clara and I are going to do next week is talk about a specific film. And I'm asking people really to bring films or to pitch films they're interested in talking about. This might change as we go on, but for the first few weeks at least, that's what we'll be doing. So what I should say, I guess, and I assume it's the same for you, Clara, I'm like a huge film enthusiast.
Yeah, I love films. I love films. And I especially love films of this era, like I would say from the 1920s or like the mid-1930s to the 1950s or early 1960s.
Well, no, I know you were one of the first people who sort of sounded enthusiastic about this idea when I was talking to people. So obviously that's why I asked you on first of all. What I thought we'd do for this first episode is just talk a bit more about our own interest in films. So like, we'll list a few favourites and so on from the Hollywood Golden Age, and just as kind of an appetizer for next week, I suppose, when we're going to get into a specific film which we'll unveil at the end of the podcast. But how did your interest in films start, Clara? I mean, was it in your teens? Was it earlier? How did it start? And what kind of things first appealed to you? Was it like Golden Age stuff, or were you more into the like contemporary scene? How did it exactly go for you?
Yeah, so it was much earlier than my teenage years, and I was really introduced to films initially very much by my father.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an era, I mean, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and I wasn't really as enamored with films from the 80s and 90s as I was from films of the era of my father's childhood or my father's adolescence. And I think that's because we, for a big portion of the time when I was a kid, we either didn't have a television, or we had a very small television, or we had a black and white television. So naturally, I was watching films that, I guess, sort of fit that medium a bit more. I did used to go to the cinema as a teenager, but as a child, I watched films at home. And I was introduced to a lot of films that were like sort of classic westerns, classic musicals, partly because that's stuff that my parents enjoyed and they liked watching. And so I think it is odd, like in recent years, I've actually watched films that everybody loves, like Ghostbusters. I'd never seen Ghostbusters before, you know, and there's a whole bunch of films that I've never seen from the 80s and 90s that are like classics. And that's because during that period, I was watching films from like the baby boomer generation.
So we need to thank Mr. Cook.
Actually, no. That's my husband's name. We need to.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we'll thank him too.
Yeah, we'll thank him too because he's, you know, put up with my podcasting hobby. My father is an American actually as well. My father's called Manassian, David Manassian. So, yeah, it was a lot of the stuff that he watched when he was a kid is stuff that he sort of wanted to watch with me when I was younger. And there were a lot of old films on television in those days.
Yeah, it's changed now, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There isn't any old films on television anymore. You have to watch them, especially on some sort of special cable channel, or you have to buy them.
Yeah, you have to really seek them out. It's a real shame, actually, I think. In terms of me, I was quite late developing an interest in films then, because I think my parents really weren't, and they're not really, you know, to this day, they're not really big movie watchers. So I never really had them sit me down and watch much. My granddad on my mum's side was a bit more of a film fan, but I'd never would watch films with him either. So we moved quite a bit when I was a kid because of my dad's job, you know, and usually I sort of took it in my stride and, you know, new schools, new friends, whatever. But eventually, after one particular move, it just didn't quite happen, didn't make friends quite as readily. You know, I wasn't going out as much as a consequence. So I think that summer I just started reading film magazines kind of casually, must have been about 13. And that just kind of helped widen my taste a bit beyond, like, all I'd been watching was the odd, like, blockbuster. You know, it was nothing beyond that. In terms of old films, I mean, what I really got into, first of all, was not the kind of studio system, though. It was kind of like the American New Wave of the 70s, really, like Scorsese and Coppola, stuff like that. That was soon followed, though, by, like, the classical American cinema. And it was kind of like you say, I mean, you could see a lot more on TV then than you can, you know, now. So just being at home, flicking the channels and stumbling across stuff was the way I got into it, really. So that's kind of my origin story, as it were. There we go. Did you have like a favourite genre? I know you said like about westerns and musicals. Did you have one in particular you like gravitated to?
I think when I was really young, westerns were the big thing for me. And then as I got a bit older, I think I sort of switched to musicals, which in a way is kind of a little bit like my mother always... I always would watch a musical, classic musical with my mum, and I'd always watch like a classic Western with my dad. And it really was something that was a regular thing because on Sundays on Channel 4 in the afternoon, you know, when everybody's kind of sleepy and tired, there would be a classic film. There'd be a black and white film on Channel 4 on terrestrial television. And every morning on Sunday morning on Channel 4, there would be Rawhide, which is, you know... I mean, everyone knows Rawhide, right? But actually, not everyone does. Sometimes I come across someone who doesn't. I'm like, you don't know Rawhide? You know, so like a black and white Western television show with Clint Eastwood in it.
Yeah, before his movie stardom kicked in, of course, yeah. I mean, I was really into Westerns as well. I guess we may well talk about that more next week, mightn't we? But I also like really got into film noir. You know, I just found that world like really like intoxicating, really exciting. But to be truthful, I didn't really like discriminate, you know. I mean, I really enjoyed musicals, melodramas, gangster films, whatever it might be. You know, I just kind of devoured them at the time. So I think part of the reason for me doing this podcast, though, is to kind of go back, you know, because of the demands of like whatever it might be, raising kids or whatever, that kind of eat into your time. You know, there are some pretty significant like gaps in my knowledge, and I really want to go back and see a lot of stuff that I haven't as yet, you know. So that's kind of why I'm part of the reason why I'm setting this up anyway. I guess when we think a lot about old Hollywood, though, we think about the stars, because I don't know, there's just something different about stardom of that time to the present day, wasn't there? Something kind of larger than life about those figures.
Yeah, there was also a lot of money in Hollywood. So even during World War II, America didn't suffer the same way as Europe suffered in World War II. I'm not saying, obviously, many, many people died, but in financially, economically, it didn't suffer as much. So there wasn't like a level of rationing like there was in Europe and stuff like that. So although, obviously, Europe continued to make films during World War II, especially Britain, they made a lot of very patriotic propaganda-style films, America just seems to have this huge amount of wealth. Hollywood seemed to have this huge amount of wealth. So just the films themselves, the sets and the costumes and the movie stars, it's all so glamorous. They're like dripping with this like lavishness, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like opulence. Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about some of these people then. So could you single out a favourite male star from the old golden age?
So that's really hard because...
It is hard. There's so many.
There's so many. And I have to say, I do really like Humphrey Bogart.
Ah, interesting.
Humphrey Bogart and I would say Jimmy Stewart or Cary Grant.
Yeah.
Cary Grant, obviously, he's British, you know, so he came from Bristol, didn't he? So
yeah.
I have a sort of soft spot because that's like a British person in Hollywood. But, and also he's a very dapper, suave kind of guy. But Humphrey Bogart, I don't know, there is something kind of old style Hollywood, you know, he's a real hard-boiled kind of detective type.
Yeah.
He's always got those really great one-liners. He's very subtle, his acting's very subtle. I do like Jimmy Stewart, though. In something like The Philadelphia Story, he's very good at comedy.
He is, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, my answer would, like, without hesitation, would have been Bogart. You know, he was the first one I really, like, latched onto. And I don't know why, just something about him that's incredibly charismatic, even when, if you met somebody like that in real life, you wouldn't necessarily assume they'd be so charismatic. You know, he's quite short, had a very, you know, distinctive, lispy voice and everything. But on the screen, just something about him kind of jumped off it, you know. But no, my choice was James Stewart, actually, for a couple of reasons. You know, he was great in, like you say, comedies like The Philadelphia Story, but in all sorts of stuff, really, you know. Great in westerns, you know, great in thrillers. And I think the reason I'm going to pick him is he did some terrific work for, like, some of the very best directors that are out there, you know, people like Hitchcock, Frank Capra, Anthony Mann. I just really admire, like, his everyman wholesome image, you know. But then there's these great films like Vertigo where, you know, that appeal's kind of turned on its head and subverted. So Stewart, I think, could do it all. And he's my pick for favourite male star, I think. What about the women of this time then? Lots of great actresses as well. Have you got a favourite?
Yeah, so that's really hard for me. Partly because I think when I was younger, I did focus more on, I mean, when you, you know, you're, I mean, it's natural, I suppose, when you're a little girl, you focus more on the female stars. And I always really liked Shirley MacLaine. And she comes a little bit later, you know, she's a little bit more in like the, like, I would say late 50s, early 60s. But she just had this real sort of kind of spunky kind of like kind of confident way of acting. And yet again, there's always Lauren Bacall. Ingrid Bergman is really, I mean, I saw a documentary on Ingrid Bergman and I found that I kind of, sometimes I wish I hadn't watched it. Sometimes I wish I didn't know the backstories of actors. I kind of just wish I just remembered them as they were on screen. But yeah. Betty Davis, I've always liked Betty Davis.
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah.
She's crazy, you know, she's crazy, but she's just really sort of expressive and she's just so mean.
Yeah, there was a, did you see the miniseries Feud about her and Joan Crawford? It was on a few months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were horrible to each other.
Totally. I mean, my favourite, you've already mentioned her, is Ingrid Bergman, I think. I think she truly was a great actress, I believe, you know. Immense talent, immense charm as well. And to be frank, the camera just loved her, you know. Incredible in close-up, you know. And, like, one of my favourite films of this era is Casablanca. And I just think it's unimaginable without her, you know. You could have put another actress in there, but it just wouldn't have worked quite as well, in my opinion. So that's the main reason. But also some of the great stuff, like Notorious for Hitchcock. And she had an interesting life. I think you kind of alluded to it there, haven't you? Where she gets embroiled in this big public scandal, you know, when she has this extramarital affair with the European filmmaker Rossellini, you know. And she sort of becomes, like, you know, a notorious figure in the United States. It's actually a really interesting, like, case study when you think about Hollywood scandals. But she made some great films back in Europe too, stuff like Stromboli. So Bergman, I think, is my choice. I don't think I've got any of her films lined up for the podcast yet. I'll have to rectify that, though. And I think a lot of great filmmakers at this time too, weren't there? You know, some of the greats of, you know, of all time, really, working in Hollywood during the studio system. So anyone jump out for you? Someone whose films you particularly are fond of?
Well, you did mention Frank Capra before, and I've been very fond of his films a lot. I also really liked Howard Hawks' films.
Yep.
And John Ford. I think those three are some of the, I would say, three of the main directors that I probably would watch their films the most, I would say.
I think Hawks is an interesting one, isn't he, in terms of the women in his films? Because you get a lot of, like, strong, independent, spunky, like, heroines in Hawks' films.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I think I do struggle with Hitchcock, I must say. I really like some of his early films, but I do struggle with some of the later ones, partly because of the treatment of women in them, and also because I'm just not very fond of being frightened.
So. No, I think that's I think it's a fair point now, because I think after a certain point, Hitchcock's treatment of women, he seems to get a bit more like sour in his treatment towards them. It's actually quite a, in one sense, it's fascinating, you know, a kind of undercurrent for his work. But no, I think it's totally a fair point. I'm going to choose Billy Wilder.
Oh, Billy Wilder, yeah.
Yeah. I think you just glance down like his list of credits and just the breadth of excellence is just like stunning, you know. You can just reel them off. It's like, you know, Double Indemnity, Sunset Boulevard, The Apartment with Shirley MacLaine, of course.
Yeah, that's one of
Some
my
Like
favorites.
It Hot, Ace in the Hole, and you can just go on and on and on, you know. And what stands out for me, I mean, he's a great director, obviously, but also what stands out are his, like, screenplays are just like clockwork, you know. Many of them written with his long-term writing partner, I.A.L. Diamond. Just brilliantly constructed, but you're just, like, littered with, like, unforgettable quotes you can just, like, pull out. So, yeah, definitely can't wait to cover him on the podcast. So Wilder would be my choice for my favourite director, I think.
Yeah, so one of the reasons why I love these old films is not only because you get an insight into how filmmaking has evolved, you know, over the decades, and the different sort of techniques and acting styles, but it's also like a window into the past. So The Apartment, it's like watching how an office and a business operated in the 1960s. And I just love that, the detail. And it, I guess in those days, it wasn't something that was difficult to film, and it wasn't detail, because that's how businesses were run and that's how offices were run. But just the stuff that he uses in his flat, and the from, you know, the way that people are living in an apartment block, and a lot of this sort of older film, a lot of the older films, from the costumes they wear to the hats they wear to the things that they use to the cigarette boxes they have, it all makes me think of my grandparents. You know, it all makes me think of the past, and it's like there, it's like a story, it's like almost like a little bit of a historical record as well as a really excellent film.
Totally, and sort of in that vein, you know, like we mentioned somebody like Bogart, but if you think of somebody like Bogart or James Cagney or somebody, if you bumped into somebody like that in the street, they'd just seem completely out of place today, wouldn't they? It's almost like unimaginable that people used to like talk like that, and, you know, I don't know, something about it is just really fascinating, I think.
Well, everybody used to wear hats, and you see it, all these films, everyone wears hats, and my grandfather and my grandmother never left the house without a hat. Never.
Yeah, well, my granddad was the same. It'd be like, I don't know, like 32 degrees outside, and he'd be sat in like a jacket and a tie, and, you know, unimaginable. All right, I think the last one we'll talk about quickly on this little kind of intro podcast then, and this is an excruciating one, I think, but like, do you have a particular favourite film of this Hollywood golden age? Now, it might be the film we're going to talk about next week, or it might not, I don't know. I'll throw it over to you, Clara. Do you have a favourite?
So I've got to choose one.
Only one.
If I've got to choose one, I have to say it has to be Casablanca.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get a better film than that. It has everything in it that you could want in a film. It has romance, it has adventure, it has a moral story, it has fighting oppression, it has a great song, it has sadness and joy and friendship. There is nothing better than Casablanca.
Yeah, that's a film that never fails to, like, there are just points in that film where I, like, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, you know, and I just get chills. Like, when they strike up La Marseillaise to, like, drown out the Nazis, you know, just something really stirring about it. And the whole film's got brilliant moments, like, on a, you know, almost like clockwork, they come along, don't they, every couple of minutes. It's a fantastic film. I'm going to choose. I mean, I narrowed it down to two, but the first one that came to mind for me was Singing in the Rain. And I just find Singing in the Rain like a wonderful, like, tonic, you know. I could watch that film. I could be in like the foulest mood imaginable. If you sat me down in front of Singing in the Rain, I just, within minutes, I'd be uplifted, you know, my spirit would soar or something, you know. I'm actually a big fan of the Hollywood musical. I think Singing in the Rain is probably like the high watermark of it. What else, though? I mean, maybe it's like, you know, because it's a film about films, you know, it's got that self-reflexive element. Maybe that's what lifts it up as well for me. Maybe it really appeals to me as like a cinephile. I don't know. I'm assuming you must have seen Singing in the Rain, Clara. Hopefully you like it too.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I love it. And I think actually you're right about the joy in it. I think whenever you hear the first few bars of the actual song Singing in the Rain, it's just like this heartwarming, nostalgic feeling just washes over you, especially when it's raining outside. You know, it makes the worst weather seem delightful.
Oh, it does. It, you know, it's all I can do not to like jump up on the lamppost and like swing around, you know.
And like hurt your back and break your leg. And
I mean, hopefully, I'm sure we will. At some point, we'll get to do Singing in the Rain on this podcast. And I can't wait, honestly. But it's not on the cards just yet. Now, before we reveal, I want to keep people listening. So before we reveal what we're talking about next week, let's talk a little bit about your podcasting ventures, Clara, because I know you've got like, you know, some stuff ongoing and some stuff in the works too. So tell us about Primitive Culture, first of all, which is where I guess you can most regularly be heard, isn't it?
Yeah, so Primitive Culture is a podcast show that's part of the Trek FM network. And the Trek FM network is a big network of Star Trek podcasts, sort of exploring different areas of Star Trek, different shows. There's one exploring the music of Star Trek, the philosophy. And Primitive Culture is kind of a unique podcast because it explores how our culture and our history have had an impact on Star Trek and how Star Trek's had an impact on our culture and history. So, for instance, we did an episode about NASA and Star Trek, and how the two are quite closely intertwined, in which they are. Like, NASA's used Star Trek and Star Trek's, like, sort of invoked NASA, that kind of thing. So we produce it every 2 weeks. It was released every 2 weeks. And I do it with another co-host called Duncan Barrett, who is a published author who writes about social history and also has written about Star Trek too. So it's really exciting. It's a lot of work because we have to do a lot of research and watch a lot of Star Trek, but it is a lot of fun. Yeah,
I'm one of my ongoing like missions is to try and get into Star Trek, and I'm kind of getting there. I mean, I'm following Discovery. I enjoyed that up to a point, and Deep Space Nine, people keep telling me to watch, so I've got to get into that soon. It's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Netflix, yeah.
As soon as I can, I'll be on that. So, and I have listened to a couple of Primitive Culture episodes, though, and it's really good stuff.
Oh, cool.
Now, what about, I know you've got something in the works, too. I don't know how much you can say about it at this stage. It's up to you. It's called The Tales We Tell, I understand, yeah?
Yeah, so I've decided to start a podcast, my own podcast, which is, this is a big venture. It's quite, you know, a bit nerve-wracking.
It's a big thing, isn't it?
It is a big thing, especially when you're doing it on your own, as I'm sure you know, like when you don't have a co-host. So it's a lot, it's quite a lot of work, and it's, you know, you're, and whenever you put something out there that's creative for an audience, it's always a little nerve-wracking. So it's called The Tales We Tell, and it's going to be centered on looking at the stories that women tell and also the stories that men tell about women. So women in film, women in television, women in fiction, a lot to do with female characters. And I wanted to look at films and television shows going far, very far back, and also more recent stuff like The Handmaid's Tale, which of course is very much about women. And also I wanted to explore gender as well. So as much as we wanted to talk about female characters, we want to talk also about how the sort of representation of men has changed as well. So I'm hoping to have quite a lot of episodes. I'm hoping to release that on a monthly basis and start releasing the episodes in the autumn of this year.
Autumn of this year. Perfect. And you know what? Maybe the Howard Hawks woman, the Howard Hawks heroine would be an interesting one.
Yes, definitely.
Interesting. Okay, Clara. So, I mean, we've teased people a little bit. So, I mean, I asked you, I think, first of all, just give me a few names of films you're interested in doing. And they're all brilliant stuff, all stuff I want to do on the podcast one day. But we settled on one, didn't we? So what are we going to talk about next week, Clara?
We're going to talk about Stagecoach, which is probably, I would say, isn't that the film where John Wayne, it's really the big film, first big film that he's in. I mean, he's been in films before that, but they were relatively B-rate westerns, weren't they?
Yeah, I think we'll talk a bit more next week, I guess, about him. But yeah, he'd had a fairly decent role in a film called The Big Trail, but that was like 1930, and Stagecoach is 39, isn't it? So I think his career had been kind of languishing, you know, in the run-up to Stagecoach, B-westerns and that kind of thing. So yeah, no, it's the one that kind of solidifies his stardom, I think. Yeah, definitely. So Stagecoach is what we're going to look at next week. If people, hopefully, some people will tune in and be kind of watching along with us. So I suppose the question is, how readily available is this film? Now, we're in the UK, obviously. It's quite easy to get this film on DVD. There are a couple of releases of it. I'm not entirely sure which one's the best. I think all of them probably suffer from, you know, there isn't like a bells and whistles Blu-ray of this film, unfortunately, that we can get anyway in the UK. But it's on DVD, and it's also on Amazon Prime, Clara, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, so you can rent it, I think, for like something like £3 or something. And I think you can buy it for probably a bit, maybe a bit more, maybe like £5 or £6. It's not, because it's such an old film, it's not hugely expensive.
So yeah, if people want to track it down, you should be able to find it. I'm not sure about the US. I assume it's on streaming over there, but I don't know for certain. Okay, but that's next week's business, I suppose. People might be looking at social media in the meantime, Clara, I guess. So where are you, Clara? Where are you on Twitter?
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at ClaraJeanMC. Please come along and tweet and say hi. And you can also find my new podcast at The Tales Podcast.
Awesome. In terms of me, you can find me on Twitter at CSweeney758. But also, what I'd like you to do, if at all possible, is find the podcast on Twitter, which is at Movie Palace Pod. Or if you search for Movie Palace on Facebook, hopefully you'll find the page I've set up, which I'm very gradually and slowly like updating as we go along. But yeah, it'd be great to see people over there too. And I'll see you next week, Clara. It's going to be a long week, I think, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, see you next week.
And hopefully, listeners, you'll join us too when the curtain rises next week at the Movie Palace.